Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
This show is brought to you by Doc Sports Services. On today's edition of Listen In with KNN, presented by Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM, I'm welcoming on, in my special guest today, a sports broadcaster and journalist in Anne-Marie Bastin. And what that means is time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along with the conversation using hashtag Listen In with KNN.
Looking for winning sports picks and predictions? Since 1971, Doc Sports has been recognized as one of the most trusted names in the sports handicapping industry. For the listeners of this very show, Doc Sports is giving out $60 worth of their premium member picks for free. These are the exact same premium member picks that 1,000 of their current members pay for. And guess what? You get them for free. Just text the word radio to the number 29022. Text radio to the number 29022 for instant access. Doc Sports also provides free picks on every single game. You want NBA picks? Simply Google search Doc's NBA picks. NHL picks? Google search Doc's NHL picks. Need MLB picks? Google search Doc's MLB picks. Remember to text the word radio to the number 29022 and start winning today with Doc Sports Service.
Welcome back to Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district and beyond. We're right here by Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM. It's now time to welcome in today's special guest, sports broadcaster and journalist Anne-Marie Bastin. Anne, how are you?
I'm very well, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's so good to have you. I have to say, I'm so jealous of your accent. I'm always jealous of the British accents. They sound so good and so crisp and clear. But thank you so much for making time in your schedule to join us today.
You're welcome.
Perfect. And if you just don't mind, I'd love to run through your bio just to give the listeners a little bit of your background.
Wow, I've had a checkered work history, to be honest with your listeners. So where should I start? Well, when I left university, I really wanted to work in TV production. So I did that for a few years. And then I fell out of love with it for a little while. So I started doing different jobs here and there. But in the back of my mind, I always loved sports, but didn't think I could ever work in it. So I went to work in PR. I was always told that I was somebody who had good writing skills and knows how to have a conversation with someone, good personality, quite warm person, quite approachable. So I literally fell into PR, and that was my first proper job. But as I said, there was always this feeling in the back of my mind that I wanted to work in sports. So I wanted to learn a bit more about public relations. So I worked in that for about 6 or 7 years. And then I started to make contacts in the sports world because I wanted to move away from the PR sector that I was working in more into sports. And mm-hmm. as I started to do that, I started having conversations with various journalists and investing time and building relationships. And one person said to me one day, well, have you ever thought about becoming a broadcaster or a journalist? And I said, well, yes, but I have all this self-doubt about me and about my skills, and I know you have to be a good writer and all these other abilities. And they said, oh, don't worry about that. It's your personality is important, your knowledge is important, but you've got to love it. You've really got to love it. So I thought, why not I give it a go? So I then started to build up my skills. I went to evening classes. I read a lot of journalism work, started to build up more contacts, and then started to approach people for work. And here we are today, and I'm a freelancer, and I work for a national newspaper. I freelance for them. That's predominantly for the mm-hmm. Black community. But I also have an opportunity to report for a national radio station and also contribute to a national radio station as well. And they're both sports stations.
Wow, truly amazing. Your journey and this thing where you are now, you truly are an inspiration. And you've got another freelancing right now. They understand, I mean, that you've done live pitch side reports for radio sports networks like BBC Five, Live Sports Extra for their Women's Super League football show. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. Yes. So there's matches every Sunday now, and also midweek games where we have women's football teams, and it's the sister station of Five Live. And my role is to speak to the managers before the game, get their thoughts about what they've got coming up in the next 90 minutes, and then during the game I give updates from the pitch side, and at the end of the game I'm live on the radio talking to the managers, the loser and the winner of course for the team, and then I'll speak to the goal scorers as well.
Yeah. And this is why, you guys, I mean, if you have not heard this name, make sure you're following her. She's truly doing some incredible stuff. I also understand you do stuff with Talk Sports 2 for women's football reporting and for Football First with Ray Stubbs. The weekend starts here and Saturday, Sports Day. And if that's not enough, she's also worked as a tennis match reporter for FUBAR Radio, Sports Recap Show, and The Voice Newspaper, as you mentioned. So, I mean, you're doing it all, Anne-Marie, honestly. And then you mentioned the work that you do for the newspaper, and I know you also have done Love Sports Radio Comedy Breakfast Show with Ian Stone. So, I mean, truly, you are everywhere, and this is why we had to get you on, because we have a lot to talk about. And also, I understand that you're a mentor for the Kick It Out, Raise Your Game Conference for young people wanting to work in the sports media industry. So not only is she doing it through her work, but she's also giving back, and I truly love that about you, Anne-Marie.
Thank you. That's something that's really important to me, Kelsey, because somebody mm-hmm. gave me an opportunity, and that sits in my values. That's something that's very important to me. The fact that someone has belief in me and faith in me, I want to pass that on. So that's really important for me. And I really enjoy that day. It's a one-day conference every year. And we can talk about it a bit later, but it's something that I'm very passionate about.
Yes, we are definitely going to dive into that. And I have over the half an hour, so let's get into it. So let's kick off. I'm going to work with the Women's Super League Football. So the 2018-2019 Women's Super League Football season is, of course, now underway. I want to ask you, in your opinion, what are some of the greatest games you have ever covered reporting and corresponding for live with WSL action for Talk Sport 2?
That's a really, really good question. I'd have to say it was the opening game of the season. So it was the champions, Chelsea women, who were starting the game. They were playing a team whose name suddenly just popped out of my head. But it was interesting because Chelsea women are the current champions. And at the same time, in the men's game, you have Manchester City, who are the current champions. There's a lot of talk about both those teams. Can they win the league again? So Chelsea women are under a lot of pressure to perform, to get the goals. And unfortunately, that first game that they played, it ended as a draw. And their next two domestic games also ended as a draw as well. So questions were already starting to be asked about, can they become champions again for the new season? So in that first game, speaking to the manager beforehand, I had to think, how can I approach this without sounding like, well, are you going to do it? Are you? Because, you know, the league is a very, the league in terms of the months, it's a very long competition. It goes right up until April, May time. So I'm thinking, do I ask them about their chances? Shall I ask her about her players? And in that first particular game, it was against Manchester City Women, who finished second in the table. So that first game, you had the champions versus the team that came second. There was a lot of pressure in that game, and it ended as a draw. And I think it was the right result for both the teams, but both the managers were already saying, well, actually, we don't think we're in for a shout, as we call it over here this year. We think it's going to be Arsenal Women who are going to take the title. So that was probably the most exciting match that I've covered so far, for sure.
So exciting. I was just excited from you talking about it.
It is, because I think there's a lot more eyes now on the WSL, and it's interesting that you had on, you know, the opening day of the season, you had the champions playing the runners up. I think some people might have preferred that game to be a little bit later in the season, or perhaps towards the tail end of the season, so it builds up that excitement level. But I think it was such a good opening. It was such a good showcase to show the two best teams out of the league play each other on that opening day. It's a great showcase for women's football. And you could say, well, weren't you excited, Anne-Marie, about the FA Cup final or a Champions League game? And I said, well, no, because this is a really big game for the league in terms of domestically, because there's so many eyes on it, and we want a lot more people to go to their local grounds and watch women's football. So I think it was a great opportunity to watch the two best teams slug it out for 90 minutes.
Wow. I mean, like you said, and I mean, that just is like the perfect, you know, venue for a sports fan. I mean, like you said, just dueling it out, I guess, on the field. I mean, it's just such an exciting thing, and I'm glad that you had the chance to cover that and share your experiences with us. And just staying with that, I mean, let's look at the season right now. So when you look at the season right now, let me ask you, which particular team do you believe will emerge as the 2018-2019 WSL champions this season?
It's a really good question. I think Arsenal Women, they're currently the top of the league at the moment, and they are playing absolutely brilliantly already. They've started out the blocks so quickly, faster, I think, than what anybody could possibly imagine, because I think there was so much focus on Chelsea Women and Manchester City Women. Arsenal came third in the league last season. And I think this will be the first season for their manager, Joe Montemurro. He joined halfway through the season last year, so he could only implement part of his plans. Well, now it's a new season, it's a new day. He can implement his plans, and they are reaping the rewards for sure. So Arsenal Women, for me, are definitely definitely the team to watch, I think, this season. They're not in the Champions League. They're still in the Continental Cup, which is the League Cup, and they're still in the FA Cup as well. So they've got the opportunity to do the treble here in the UK.
Wow. And just going with that question, now let me ask you, which players specifically have impressed you the most this season in the early stage of the current 2018-2019 WSL season?
That is, again, that's a brilliant question, because there are at least, Kelsey, I would say, three or four players who are already just producing amazing quality football. I think the person for me that sits at number one is Fran Kirby. She's a midfielder. She plays for Chelsea Women. She's the current Players Player of the Year. And she's just amazing. She's her pace, the fact that she creates space when she has the ball. She takes on defenders. She's not afraid to take her shots either, and you can see it now when Chelsea are playing other teams. You can see the defenders pretty much hone in on Fran Kirby, because she is truly, truly world class. And she is somebody, as part of the England women's team, the manager Phil Neville is full of praise for, and he said she's probably one of the best players that he has in her team, and she should be an international star. And I wouldn't disagree with that at all.
Wow. I mean, and like you said, just truly someone we have to keep our eye on. And it's still early in the season, but we will continue just to watch out to see which players continue to emerge. And staying with that, Manchester United now, of course, officially has a women's team. And let me ask you now, with United's global brand, their popularity, and their coverage in the media, How positive does this bode specifically for the women's game at the club level? How does it benefit them in the long term?
I think it has to be looked at two fronts with Manchester United, because for a long time, Manchester United didn't have a women's team, and you're absolutely spot mm-hmm. on. The global brand, you could go to Antarctica and mention the words Manchester United, and somebody right. in Antarctica will know who Man United are.
Yes.
But they haven't had a women's team for about 13, 14 years. And then mm-hmm. when the opportunity came up, they took it, and why shouldn't they? I think it was a good opportunity for them. But the slight issue I have with it, though, is that the players are fully professional, and they're in a league at the moment that is for semi-professionals. So you have team players there who are pretty much playing, you know, regularly, but also they're professional players, and they're playing against teams that have semi-professional players, which I think makes things a little bit uneven. However, it is the name mm-hmm. of Manchester United that brings a lot of gloss to the championship. I have no doubt in my mind that we will see Manchester United women in the WSL, which is the top league. It's the equivalent of the Premier League, if you like. I think they'll be promoted into the top tier. And they're playing extremely well. They've been brilliant in terms of their scores at the moment. They are winning their games. They've got a fantastic manager in Casey Stoney. She's a former England player, former Liverpool player as well, lives and breathes the game. They're going to go far. I have no doubt about it whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, and say Manchester United anywhere, I don't care where you are, someone's going to know that brand, because that's what they've built up through their history and through just the power of their play. And just staying on women's football, it has been said that women's football is more honest and some would say more pure in terms of fair play on the pitch, especially with the unethical simulation, which has so often ruined men's football, some would say. So let me ask you, what do you believe are among the reasons for the surge in popularity of women's football?
So for 50 years, women's football wasn't allowed. I don't like to use mm-hmm. the word banned, but it was effectively banned in this country. So it's got a long way to go before it reaches the crowd attendances that you see at the men's. But I think the fact that, you know, we're seeing a lot more girls now playing football in this country, and we have mm-hmm. teams that are doing really well at the Women's World Cup, and that adds a lot more awareness. It helps build the brand of women's football as well. I don't see any reason why not a woman or a girl can't play football. It's a game where you just have to pass the ball around and make sure you score, and the team wins at the end of the 90 minutes. I'm still not surprised we're still having to have this debate in this country about, you know, why do women play football? Because they enjoy it. It's a sport. It's an opportunity to play with friends or play professionally. And I think now that you see the England Lionesses doing so well, as I mentioned, at the World Cup, you've got players now actually playing abroad. I don't know if you're aware, Kelsey, but we have Tony Duggan, who now plays for Barcelona Women, which is, you know, absolutely amazing. Yeah. You wouldn't have heard that a few years ago. But also right. you've got Lucy Bronze, who's been nominated for the Ballon d'Or Award. Mm-hmm. She plays for Lyon, and she's been joined by Izzy Christensen. So we have top talent actually playing abroad. I think that says it all, really. And that could only help raise the profile of women's football in this country, knowing that you have top-class players actually playing for world-class teams like Barcelona or Lyon.
Right, right, right. It's only going to continue to grow and expand, and I'm excited for the future. And you mentioned the World Cup. So the FIFA Women's World Cup, France 2019, kicks off, of course, next summer. So I know it's early, but let me ask you, if I had to ask you right now, who do you predict to emerge as the FIFA Women's World Cup champion?
That's a tough question. That is such a tough question. it is. I mean, the difficulty we've got at the moment, though, is not we're still going through qualifying, even though England have qualified, and also Scotland as well, which is fantastic news for the Scots. They've qualified for the Women's World Cup. The teams that finished in second place are currently going through qualification. So if you were to ask me right now, without mm-hmm. all the teams that I know that are going to be there, I'm going to plump for England, purely because they finished third in the last World Cup, which was in Canada. We have Phil Neville now as their manager. As I mentioned, you've got players that will be part of the England setup, like Frank Kirby, who's also nominated for the Ballon d'Or. You've also got Lucy Bronze as well. Nikita Paris is another fantastic player. Jordan Nobbs. I'm going to plump for my own team. I'm going to say that I think England are in with a really good shout to win the World Cup.
Okay. We'll have to come back to you when the time comes. And just saying that, you mentioned Phil Neville, and I want to know, what are your thoughts on his football philosophy and tactical awareness as the manager of the England women's national team?
When I met Phil Neville, we were asking about how he keeps in contact with his players, because unlike the domestic league, he doesn't get to see his players every day. And he said that they set up, I don't know if you saw it, it was a big story in the newspapers and on social media, that he's in contact with them via WhatsApp, and he will speak to them every day. He'll drop them a message just to ask how they are and to ask about what's going on in their lives, and to also talk about football as well and if they've got any issues. But he's keen that he has contact with them on a daily basis, which I find absolutely fascinating because, as I mentioned, he's not physically seeing them every day. And his philosophy, in the answer to your other question, he talks about very much an attacking vision. Vision for his team. And he was slightly disappointed when England played Brazil at the weekend at Notts County, and also playing the Marthas, which is the Australian women team, that when it comes to that final third within the game, he believes that England are not being ruthless enough, and he wants to push them and take that killer shot to make sure that they get the goal. So part of his plan is working, and you can see the fruits of that for sure. The midfield is working much smoother now, and they're getting the ball to the striker, but they're just not finishing it off, and he's going to keep pushing them to make sure that they're very ruthless when they're in that final third.
Yes. And I mean, just staying with this conversation, I now want to kind of switch gears. So we've talked about women's football. Now I want to talk about race in football. So some would say, to a degree, racism, and you can say English football, some say it's essentially drifted to the British mainstream media, who you could say heavily criticize Black players on a consistent basis. And so I want to ask you, do you think there's a double standard for Black players in England?
There's a real debate about that at the moment because of the coverage that some players get within the British media. And the way that I see it, at times when I've read a couple of articles from certain journalists, I have raised my eyebrows thinking, okay, I'm not sure why this particular story has taken this tone or why they're saying those things. But the good thing is, though, is that people are picking up on it. Some people are picking up on it and challenging it, which we should do. We should challenge it. If we see it, we should ask the question, why has it been written this particular way? And I'm sure you're probably aware of the stories about Raheem Sterling. There were stories about him.
That came to mind first.
Yeah, absolutely. The stories about, you know, he's a good son. He bought his mum a house, and that was, for some reason, the worst thing on the planet to do. I don't understand that. He's a fantastic player. He brings so much to the England team, and I couldn't understand that. And as I said, the good thing, though, particularly with, I don't know if I can say it's a good thing, the right thing, I would say, is that people are starting to challenge it. And we should ask that question. Why is the story coming from this particular angle? Help me understand why the story is talking about a player in this particular way. And I think you'll see a lot more of that. And I think that's also down to social media as well, for sure.
And just staying on that, I mean, your uncle, the legendary Brendan Batson OBE, regularly received, let's say, a torrent of disgraceful, very racial abuse from fans during his playing days with Arsenal and Cambridge United. Just staying with that, I mean, what does it mean to you that your uncle was Arsenal's first ever Black player, as well as a part of the great 3 degrees at Albion? I mean, what does that just mean to you?
I'm immensely proud of my uncle, and I adore him, and he'll probably get embarrassed if he hears me say that about him, but I am so proud of my uncle and what he's achieved and what he continues to achieve. I mean, you know, I've heard the stories, the absolute horror stories of when he would run out onto a pitch and have to dodge certain things that are being thrown at him, and hearing the crowd chant the most horrible things, and that's me being diplomatic. So for what he's achieved and what he's done for the game, being, as you said, that iconic, legendary trio of the three degrees with, you know, the late Laurie Cunningham, the late Cyril Regis and my uncle. And knowing that he was the first, as you mentioned, the first black player to play for Arsenal, I'm immensely proud of him. And this is why I support Arsenal to this day. And I will support Arsenal till I die, because they were a team that gave him a chance because they spotted his talent. And I will be forever in their debt for that.
It truly means a lot. And I'm curious a little bit. You currently write sports articles for the UK's number one black newspaper, The Voice. What has been the most enriching and, let's say, fulfilling element contributing to the publication?
Yeah, this is a tough one, because I think when I write for The Voice newspaper, I write articles about football in terms of men's and women's, but I also talk about tennis as well. And I think for me, it's the opportunity to talk about tennis. And the reason I say that is because, you know, we have, you know, one of the greatest players on this planet, which is, of course, Serena Williams. It's the opportunity to talk about her, but also to highlight other players of colour in tennis that are coming through. So I've spoken to a couple of players. I've written about other players, such as Sloane Stephens. And you see, over here, Sloane Stephens may not necessarily get mentioned in another paper in particular. Mm. So The Voice has been brilliant in giving me that opportunity to talk about players that don't necessarily have a light shone on them, if that makes sense. So as I mentioned, I wrote a really positive piece about Sloane Stephens when she won the US Open Grand Slam last year, which was amazing. I watched that final. And it was an amazing match, and having the opportunity to write about that for a national newspaper just, you know, filled my heart with joy, really. So I think, as I mentioned, the opportunity to shine a light on players, particularly players of colour who may not necessarily get the same focus as in other newspapers.
Okay, so staying with that, I mean, I understand you identify as British Caribbean, and you're a British Caribbean woman in the UK sports media industry. So that being said, I mean, what have been some of the biggest obstacles that you faced both personally and professionally, in your opinion?
That's an interesting question, because I think obstacles, if they've been there, I've just completely ignored them and just keep steamrolling my way through them. I try, I won't let anything take me away from what I want to do, which is to talk about sport and share information and share knowledge with other people who love sport as much as I do. So, you know, I've heard anecdotal stories from colleagues of mine who faced much, much bigger barriers than what I have had. I don't want to say that I've been lucky. That wouldn't be the right thing, but I'm aware that I have to work twice as hard to do the job that I really, really want to do. And I work very hard, Kelsey. I work extremely hard, but I never take it for granted. I make sure that I know my craft. I keep studying. I keep learning. I keep building relationships with people, which I think is really, really important. And I remind people that I'm out there and this is what I want to do, and hoping somebody can take a chance on me. I won't be that person who says, well, I can't get a job because of X, Y, and Z. I want to be the person that says, actually, I got a job because I'm talented and I'm knowledgeable and I'm passionate about working in sport.
Right. And just staying on the subject, I mean, with all this being said, do you truly believe that the window of opportunity is opening up more for journalists of color now in sports journalism in England?
It's opened a little bit, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. I was at a conference this week, actually, called the D Word Conference, which is run by BCOMS, which is the Black Collective of Media in Sport. And it was a conference to talk about how much work that still needs to be done in terms of opening the doors for people of colour, but also people of LGBTQ as well, and women as well. So, you know, it's not done yet. The door is opening a little bit, for sure, but we want to open the door even wider than what it is right now. And that's really important, because I think the minute we take the foot off the pedal, I think people will assume, well, you know, we've got one person of colour in the TV now. Alex Scott, who's a former England and Arsenal player. She's one of the pundits on Sky Sports now. She's fantastic at what she does. But we want to see more people like her doing exactly what she's doing. And we'll keep pushing for that. I think, as I said, you know, having one person or two, three people now working in sports media. There's Darren Lewis, who's a journalist for the Daily Mirror as well. He's a football journalist. He's somebody I admire quite a lot. My editor, Rodney Hines, for the Voice newspaper as well. So there are people there, but we want a lot more people working in the space. And why wouldn't we? Because it's reflective of society today. I live in a country that is very diverse. And I believe that needs to be reflected in society right across the board.
And I completely agree with that. I mean, I think we always need to be reflective of the society in which we live. The world is growing more minority dominant. And I think we need to make sure we have that representation, not just in sports, but in every single industry. There's room for all of us at the table. And that's something I'm always constantly preaching. So it's so good to hear you say this. And with that being said, I mean, what advice in general would you offer to young females who aspire to not only succeed, but also to just survive in the cutthroat media industry?
There are times when I think about, what has it taken for me to even get to this point? And it's all about the hard work. This has not been an overnight blow up. Suddenly Amory's there and she's doing all those things that you've listed at the beginning of our conversation. That's been years of making contacts, learning my craft, not going out on a Saturday night and spending Saturday night watching. I don't know if you know, over here there's a program called Match of the Day, which is it's a highlights program of all the Premier League matches that have taken place on a Saturday. And I would, you know, my friends would, when I was at university, would say, oh, are you coming down the pub? And I said, well, actually, no, I've got, you know, I want to stay in and watch Match of the Day. And I'd watch it and I'd watch the game and I would take notes. You know, it's making those sacrifices to get to where I want to be. And I'd read as well. Don't stop reading. When you're on social media, follow your favorite sports journalist. Buy a newspaper. Read the match reports. Know your sport as well. And my other tip I would definitely say is enjoy it, but also understand there will be times when there will be highs and lows, for sure.
Right.
There will be days where everything's fantastic and it's all great and there's a real buzz. And there'll be days where you think, I've got to send that email again to that person. I need to make a phone call to that person. They're not calling me back and all these kinds of things. So I do believe it is about working hard. I do believe it is about reading, buying a newspaper, staying in sometimes on a Saturday or go and watch a football match or a tennis match or a rugby match or a cricket game, something like that. Read the reviews, watch interviews on YouTube. And as I mentioned, find your favorite journalist, but understand it's a long game. It's not a sprint. This is a marathon. And then there will be days where things, you don't hear anything and you think, oh, is it worth it? And should I give up? And I'm hopefully the testament to show that I keep persevering. Someone called me relentless the other day.
Okay.
And I think I can say that as a compliment. I'm just somebody who...
I think it is.
Yeah, thank you. I think it is. I don't want to be seen like a pest. Of course not. But I do believe in me and I do believe in what I want to do. And it's a real privilege. And I want to be part of that world. So I want to have a job that people would only could dream of. But it does take hard work to get there. And you've got to be prepared to put the hours in to be rewarded.
Right. Oh, I love that. You have to be prepared to put the hours in for being rewarded.
Do you know what, Kelsey? I have a bit of a saying. I keep saying, it's my little mantra that I say, that you've got to live it, breathe it, know it. And that's what I say. You mentioned at the beginning about the Raise Your Game conference. When I meet young people, I say that to every single one. You've got to live it, breathe it, and know it. Anything less than that, it's, you know, you have to ask yourself, how much do you really want it?
And that's so true. I consider my career like my baby. I mean, like you said, you have to live it, breathe it, and truly love what you do. You're going to be working a lot of long hours. Guess what? If you love it, it's not really work, but you have to be committed to your craft. And staying with that, some women who are committed to their craft, you've been in the news, of course, Amazon Prime this season featured the NFL's first all-female broadcast team for Thursday Night Football. Clap, clap, snap, snap. This was huge news coming out this football season. So if people didn't know, Amazon's live streams of 11 NFL Thursday Night Football games featured the first all-female broadcast booth in league history. So yes, on Thursday Night Football, this is such an incredible thing to listen to watch and see. It's Andrea Kramer, who of course is a longtime NFL reporter, and she's a recent Pro Football Hall of Fame inductee, so she's obviously put the work in. And of course, she's announcing the game alongside Hannah Storm, who is an ESPN Sports Center anchor, and she's a Monday Night Football pregame show host. So when you heard this news, and if you listen to these games, I mean, how big is this for you, Anne-Marie, especially being over in the UK, just to see what these women are trailblazing for in football over here?
It's huge. It's huge. And it was a big story here, actually, when the news broke about it. And in fact, there was an event this week where a senior representative from Amazon was talking about proposing, and I say the word proposing, something similar for over here when Amazon... See, I don't know if you're aware, but Amazon actually won the right to show some Premier League games from the 2019-2020 season.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And at this particular event, the Amazon executive was suggesting that they may consider doing the same thing over here, considering having two female sports journalists spearheading the coverage. And again, that was a big story over here. I've got, as you were clapping and saying, cheering for this big news that happened at the end of September, I think it's fantastic. I'd love it. I'd love to see an all-female commentary team presenting football. I think it's the way that it's going, to be honest. So it's all good as far as I'm concerned. I mean, how was it over there? How has it been received?
I think it's been honestly received great, but I'm not going to lie to you, Emery. You also do have your haters. I'm going to call them haters, yes. I've heard people saying things like, oh, we don't like their voices. What? I mean, just some of the most nitpicky stuff, but I think with change, you will have some resistance. People, unfortunately, get used to the status quo, even though I think me and you both know it should have been changed. And I think this is just the beginning. So to all those who don't like it, I say this is just the beginning. And props to Amazon for being trailblazers in this movement. And hopefully others catch on and see that, you know, it's 2018. It should not be crazy women to be doing this stuff. They should have been doing this stuff. So I give them so many props for starting this. And now I'm so glad, Anne-Marie, that young girls can look up and see that they can do it too.
Absolutely.
I really think it's a wonderful thing. And I'm glad that, you know, again, there's always going to be people that don't agree with it, but that's with everything, right? And times are coming, times are changing. So if you're not on the bandwagon, I'm sorry, but you can just, you're still going to watch football. I don't care what anybody says. Football is king over here. You're still going to watch it. You can complain if you want to, but what these ladies are doing is truly incredible. And staying on the track of incredible, so are you with the work that you're doing with Kick It Out. So, I mean, describe to me your very positive involvement with the UK's leading anti-racism initiative, Kick It Out.
So Kick It Out is an initiative that is very, very close to my heart. I worked for them when it first started many moons ago. My uncle, actually, Brendan, he sent me there to do some work experience to learn how to be part of a team and help out with the office admin tasks. And I was there for about 3 weeks and I absorbed so much knowledge from them. And ever since then, I've always been very supportive of all their initiatives. And initially it was called Kick Racism Out of Football. And it was a campaign group to do exactly what it says on the tin, to kick racism out of the game. Mm-hmm. And since then, it's grown into an organization and it's changed, it's rebranded itself now, it's known as Kick It Out. And it's tackling not only the issue of racism from fans who might be in the stands shouting and saying racist stuff, but also challenge homophobia as well and sexism within the game. Mm-hmm. And the chief executive, Roisin, she recently has been awarded one of the Queen's Honours for her work.
Wow.
Issues within the game. And Troy Townsend, who's one of the senior members of the team, he's somebody who will go around the country with his colleagues, going into schools and colleges, meeting players who might have experienced some racist chanting at them when they've been playing a game, and helping them and giving them options about what to do next. So for me, I want to use my voice to share the wonderful work that Kick It Out does and continues to do, and to lend my support. And as part of that, they have a yearly conference called Raise Your Game, and it's an opportunity and it's free, which is fantastic. It's been held at the Emirates Stadium, which is the home of Arsenal, for the last couple of years. And it's an opportunity for young people, men and women, to meet people who work within the game. So not only meeting people from the media like myself, but from coaches, administration, governance as well. Because not everybody wants to play football and not everybody wants to be a football journalist. Somebody might want to be a commercial director one day for a club. So it's an opportunity for a young person, as I said. And what it's very much like speed dating. That's the best way to describe the day.
Yeah.
They meet mentors, spend about 5-10 minutes with the mentor, and then they move on to the next person that they want to see. And it's such a great event, and it's grown year on year. And the fact that it's free as well, I think, is a massive help. And I can see it growing and growing over the next few years or so.
Nice. And just saying, I mean, you have me excited. I'm sure everyone listening to this is. So, but how can one both support and get involved with Kick It Out?
Kick It Out are always looking for supporters. So if you go to their website, if you Google Kick It Out and just go straight to their website, there will be information on there about how to get involved. I think the main thing is, for me, is encouraging, what they want to do is encourage the use of their Kick It Out app. That's one thing that people can help with. So if you're at a game, for example, and you can hear a section of the crowd shouting some sort of racist language, sexist language, something homophobic, something against somebody's religion as well, you can use the app to report it, and then Kick It Out will then take the appropriate measures to look into and have an investigation. So that is one way you can, you know, members of the public can certainly support the work of Kick It Out.
That is wonderful. We definitely have to get something like that over here, because that's needed. And hopefully it continues to bring attention to problems that we have with racism across the world. And that saying on that, I mean, can you just name some of the professional players and managers in the game that are currently advocates of Kick It Out?
Pretty much everybody within the Premier League are strong advocates for Kick It Out. Chris Hughton, he's the manager for Brighton and Hove Albion. He's a wonderful person to speak to about the game. He's a fantastic manager as well. He's a huge supporter of Kick It Out. And you see sometimes there'll be a day specifically for Kick It Out where players will wear T-shirts with the Kick It Out logo on it and encouraging people to sign up with the app. There was also the England team as well a few months ago, where to celebrate the anniversary of Kick It Out, they've been running now for 25 years, Kelsey. Can you believe 25 years?
Oh, that is amazing.
Absolutely. So when the England team, it was a game that was being shown on Sky Sports, when the England team were coming out onto the pitch, the screen went from colour to black and white to emphasise that everybody's equal and everybody's seen as one. And it went to black and white for about 25 seconds to reflect how many years Kick It Out has been running for. So there is a lot of support out there for the initiative. And they've been involved in some very, very high profile cases as well. And they'll always be there to support not just players, but supporters and staff whenever they need someone to help them understand why somebody has decided to call them a racist name within the game or said something sexist. So Kick It Out, long may they reign, long may they continue.
Yes, continue the successes and best wishes to Kick It Out. I'm so happy that you're involved with such a tremendous, tremendous program. And before you leave, Anne-Marie, I mean, I just want to ask you, what do you have currently in the pipeline that you would like to share with the audience at home?
So in terms of, for me at the moment, it's enjoying working as a pitchside reporter for Five Live Sports Extra for the Women's Super League. I'm also working in tennis as well. As I mentioned earlier, you know, being a journalist for the Voice newspaper, writing from a tennis perspective and a women's football's perspective. So for me, next year is going to be really, really important because we've got the Women's World Cup, as we've talked about earlier, and also there's the opportunity to perhaps go to Roland Garros in France as well. And we've got the Women's Netball World Cup happening in Liverpool next year, which is really, really exciting. And then still keep doing my match day reporting for the men's game as well. That's really important to me, actually, Kelsey, that I'm not just seen as somebody who works in football for men's and women's, but there are other sports as well So any opportunities that come along, I'm going to grab them with both hands.
Wonderful. Oh my gosh, Emery, thank you so much for joining us. You were magnificent.
Thank you. Thanks for your time, Kelsey. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Yes, it was great. I mean, I wish we didn't have to wrap it up, but we are going to have you back for sure. And for everyone listening, that's a wrap for this edition of Listen In with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and of course, jumped in on a K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com and KelseyNicoleNelson.com. And that's not enough. The show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matters. Until next week, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously because there's always another play.
Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM Fox Sports Radio.